Welcome to Botnet's Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 245, Onboarding Clients. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running your computer repair business. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. Let me introduce the co-host. We have Chris Carruthers from the Remote Support Tech Team. How are you doing, Chris?
I got short hair today, John. Jeff, John.
Whatever your name is.
Schmidt.
Also, that laugh is coming from none other than John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How are you doing, John?
It is an honor, as always, to be here.
Great to have you. And also is a special guest. We've seen him on Podnets Daily before, but we have Brian Best from Best Max. How you doing, Brian?
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Awesome. All right, let's go ahead. And, John, I'm going to throw it to you this week. Let's share a tip or story that we could learn from.
I got a couple little ones that I'm going to throw out to everybody this week as I try to do. I was listening to another show, and I don't know if I realize this or not, but there's a service that I've used in the past that I think we're all familiar with called VirusTotal.
Yes.
So what you can do is obviously shoot a file up there that you think may be infected or you're not sure about, or you can share it. But something to keep in mind, especially with all the compliance stuff that's going on, is that when you share a file up there, VirusTotal stores that file and then also possibly shares that file with other people and other services. So if you upload a database of information, that database and its contents could be shared with somebody else.
Ooh.
So if you read their privacy statement, just, you know, be careful what you're putting up there, because it's not just something that's going to be scanned and deleted.
Okay.
So keep that in mind when you're using VirusTotal, because if you, God forbid, uploaded a patient database or some patient files from some sort of medical facility, you would be distributing PHI, so you would be in breach of compliance. So keep that in mind. I'm going to throw a little praise out to my UTM, my firewall vendor, Calyptix. I totally screwed something up. I ordered the four wrong firewalls that showed up the day before. I was going to drive 4 hours to the other side of the state to install them. Realized that on a Sunday, emailed them, and that evening they arranged for everything to show up where I was going to be the next day.
Oh,
so
nice.
I don't know a whole lot of other vendors that would go through all that trouble to make everything, but way to go, Calyptix. Thanks for saving my butt. A little bit of fun. I don't know if you guys ever done this, but www.drawastickman.com. Go ahead and go waste 20 minutes of your life at drawastickman.com. And then the other thing, I think it was on the Mike Tech Show. He was talking about SSD drives and trying to find a good deal on them. And him bringing it up just stuck in my head, because I was having another conversation with another tech that's here local to me. You know, I was telling him, well, I just use Western Digital SSDs, and they have the standard NAND or the 3D NAND drives. The standard NAND drives are pretty cheap. But, you know, then he's telling me, well, their read-write speeds are only 550, and these other unbranded ones that he was getting that I never heard of were like 570. So in my mind, I'm thinking, who cares unless I'm really trying to do something? But the most important thing I thought when I was talking about this was the quality of the firmware on the drive. Because I don't know if you guys have been having problems, but a lot of times I've been having some Windows 10 issues where these laptops come in and it's some sort of boot issue or weird issue. It just can't be cleared up or something. And I always trace it back to some sort of firmware for the drive when I do the research, and I can never find the firmware for these off-brand drives, or you realize that the Kingwin drive was made by Hynix or Hynix, that in the firmware is supported by Bob's SSD company. So beautiful thing about the SSD drives from WD or SanDisk or Samsung is they come with software that automatically updates the firmware, blah, blah, blah. So in essence, don't be cheap. Spend $10 more and buy a quality branded product and save yourself hours of work in the end. I guess is the story there. That's it. Thank you.
Very good. Awesome. All right. So let's go ahead and Chris, why don't you give us a tip or story we can learn from?
Sure. So tip I'm going to use today is something that I've finally implemented. So within Carruthers Computers, my one-on-one company there, big thing that I've always had is that $40 deposit on appointments. I haven't really been able to easily enforce it. because, you know, 9 times out of 10, I'm booking an appointment with somebody. I'm either not at a desk or, you know, I'm off, doing something in the car. And I had to find a way to enforce that deposit so I didn't have any more of these new clients coming in and then just bailing on the appointment, or, you know, I call them at the appointment time and they're just not home or forgot or whatever. So I'm going to include links in the show notes, and I'm going to throw that up in the chat there. I've actually set up, it's rough. I haven't really done a whole lot with it yet. So it is going to look prettier. But what it do have is an entire automated online booking system set up through a service called Calendly, C-A-L-E-N-D-L-Y. And basically what is happening here is I've set up these sites so that a customer who's booking an appointment has to first pay the deposit, and then they're sent to the online calendar where they can book their appointment, which is then synced onto my calendar for my computer and my phone. So really excited to see how this is going to go. Definitely going to keep you guys updated on that. But we'll see if this can either, you know, convince people to actually be there for their appointments, or maybe get rid of some of these people that aren't sure that they're going to bother showing up.
That's a great tip, because I think a lot of people run into that same issue with it. Sometimes you do have to collect that payment up front. So that's a good idea. All right, very cool. And let's see, Brian, what do you have for us this week?
Well, you know, my tip was centered around, I know the show topic was going to be onboarding clients, that sort of thing. And so it wrote down a number of ideas for, you know, what we do in a client onboarding process. And maybe one that you might think is sort of a tip and not really a procedural thing is buying pizza. You know, basically one of the things we're trying to do when we're onboarding is we're sitting down, we try to get a meeting together with the clients. We're really interested in establishing a long-term relationship. Well, how do you get that off on the right fit? Is to, you know, set expectations. You know, that's when people get angry, right? They get angry when expectations are violated. So we'll say, all right, well, let's get your key people, maybe even your whole organization together. We'll buy pizza. We'll come in. We'll talk about how we do things. This is how you get work. Send work into us. This is what we're going to do. This is what our automated software is going to do and ask you to do, et cetera, et cetera. And now at the same time, because there's a chance to just kind of hang out in a low-key environment and chat and get to know each other.
That is an awesome tip. Yeah, that's something a lot of us, I think, don't really think about is that, you know, a way to a person's attitude sometimes is through their stomach. So I think that's awesome that you're distracting them. Not really, but you're bringing them in, and people have to eat. They have to eat lunch, right? So you're bringing it in, and people are going to be more apt to be there and listen to what you're talking about, because everybody, I don't care who you are, loves free food.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
Set it off on the right foot, you know, and we want to be friends with our clients. We want them to love us. It's hard to fire a friend.
There you go.
So let's kick it off with some friendly pizza.
Sounds good. That's a great tip. All right. So my tip is going to be not so much, well, it's kind of a tech tip, I guess. When you're flying your drone around and your son is flying his drone around, make sure that you avoid a collision at all costs. Because my son, he has $100 drone. He was flying his around, and I have $1,000 drone, and I was flying my around. And once you know it, we ended up coming around. We were kind of racing around the backyard, and we collided, and it landed on my sidewalk just in the right spot to break the most expensive part of the drone. All the other parts are like 10, 15, 20 bucks. No, I broke the whole bottom chassis. So I have to look for another one. But anyways, yeah, try to, it brought back to me a memory of seeing some of the drone racing that's going on when people are doing VR. And I don't know how they do it, because I see these things and they crash all the time and they're so fast. It's unbelievable. So anyways, that happened to me a couple days ago and I was kind of bummed. Now I have to, now I have to do something I don't want to do and actually fix my drone. So anyways,
you're supposed to turn left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Left and right. I zigged. He zagged. We collided. And, you know, his still runs, which is horrible. All right. All right. Let's take a quick break and then we'll get into our main topic. DC on Convention 2017 in Washington, D.C., September 16th and 17th. It's an IT conference for techs and business owners reimagined. Learn from fellow techs and business owners. Get business strategies that work in the real world. Discover new tech. If you're an owner operator in managed services, IT consulting, or a break fix tech, this is the place for you. You can get your hotel and tickets now, only 100 tickets available. I know we're getting down to the wire because we're only a few weeks away. So go to unconvention.io and sign up. And as a matter of fact, we have Mr. Brian Best will be a keynote speaker at the Unconvention 2017. So if you want to get a chance to meet Brian and see what's going on in his world, that's an awesome place to do that. Plus, he's going to have a lot of great information for how he built his business and moved from point A to point Z. And he actually, he's probably not even at point Z yet. He's probably still moving on. But I'm sure it's going to be a great story. So,
lots of great stories.
Awesome. People love stories. So, yeah, definitely check that out and get over there. Get your tickets. Get there. Find a room. Room with somebody. I know it's last minute, but it's in Washington, D.C. You can get there easily enough from most places. All right. So, today's main topic. This comes from Josh. So I do listen to the audience when they send in feedback, and I ask them what would be a good topic. Josh sent this. He said, what steps are people taking when onboarding a client as far as network analysis goes? When auditing a potential client's network, what kind of process is used? So I thought this was a good subject and something to talk about. And we've got three people on here that can definitely talk to this and talk about their processes and what they do to go from meeting the customer and doing that. What things do we need to look for? What things are important? What things do sometimes we not have written down on a list and maybe forget? You know, there's a lot of things that we could learn from and become better at as far as doing a network analysis. I know from my own standpoint, a lot of times, even with a list, sometimes there's things that still get missed. So maybe there's a better way to do that. Maybe check off things a little more properly. But anyways, we're going to get into that. So John, let's go ahead and start with you and talk about your process of what you do when you go into a client's network. What are some of the things that you're looking for?
Well, if it's a client I haven't spent any time with, I have a top 10 list that I try to run through as quick as I can, meaning I'm assuming that this is a quick non-paid inventory. Maybe I'm evaluating them as a potential client, or I'm evaluating them as just a quick overview so they want my opinion on what's happening with their network. So I call them my top 10, or I have the Saturday night top 10 list. So I start with servers and then endpoints. That's pretty easy. What types of servers, how many, what are they doing? Is it just a standard Windows network, or do we have a mix of different OSs, that sort of thing? Same with the endpoints, Windows, Mac, Linux mixture, or just standard Windows, and then obviously how many. So that would be one and two. Number three, I jump on and I got to see what kind of wireless we have, what we're doing, how many types, what kind of equipment we have. Do they have a guest network? Do they need a guest network? And do they need any type of isolation or anything like that with their wireless network? Number four in general would be the network itself. So I look at the routers, the switches, and any other gear that's plugged into the network from network equipment standpoint. Number five is credit card or finances. What kind of credit card machines for PCI compliance and how those are hooked up and connected. Number six is their security system. Do they have one? Is it an alarm? Is it tied into the network somehow? Number seven would be phones. So do we have an analog system? Do we have a VoIP system? What are we looking at there? Number eight kind of ties into number six, but number eight is the fire alarm, because we have to look at things like if the fire system is tied into the network, what kind of monitoring is done there. And then a lot of the times throughout my career, I've been kind of bit in the butt because they have an elevator and that's tied in somehow. So elevators on my list. Number nine, their main apps, their line of business apps, and that data. So what are their main line of business apps, and where is their data, and how are they protecting it? And then finally, number 10, I categorize as other partners. So who's taking care of that equipment? Meaning, so under four, I categorize those as printers, but maybe they have a printer vendor or a copier vendor that they're dealing with. So I would want to know who that is so I can establish a little bit of relationship with them and maybe set some ground rules that, hey, if you're going to put a new machine in, here's my contact information. I'll meet you there. We'll do it together just to make sure everything goes good, that sort of thing. So that's my quick and dirty top end list. Oh, let me add one more thing before Chris jumps in there. I'm sorry.
No.
And I run a quick tool by a company called Soft Perfect. It's called their NetScan network scanner. The great thing about that is pop it on any workstation. It'll do a net scan of the entire network. But what I really like about it, and a lot of the tools that can do this, is they automatically update and keep in the background a MAC address vendor database. So when it goes out and scans, it pulls the MAC address of all the network attached equipment, computers, and all that sort of stuff. I'll also get a vendor name, which will help me identify what's plugged into the network and where it is as well. So I'll have a link to that in the show note.
Okay. Well. Awesome. Now go ahead, Chris.
Okay. So really I'm not going to go through the entire process because the entire process is really going to be dependent on what type of client it is. But for every client, we're going to want to create a network map. I want to know where all their networking equipment is, where all their workstations are. I want a list of the servers as well as the workstations and the serial numbers that go along with them. So I want to know when everything is going to come up under warranty, when things need to be replaced. We're either going to want to install Kabuto on every machine if they're not going to be jumping in on an MSP with us. There it is. Because if they're going to be on a service plan with us, instead of putting on Kabuto, we're going to be putting on the Ninja RMM agent. From there, I want a contact list. Who am I going to be talking to the most? Who is allowed to put in a service ticket so that I can create logins for them? You know, I don't want somebody who's not allowed to spend money on the company's behalf to give me a call if they're going to be looking at a per charge request for support. I want a list of all the vendors that they're using, what their contracts look like, and who the main contact is for each of those vendors. You know, like John said, you want to have a relationship with that company. But actually just recently, you know, a printer was replaced without my knowledge, which caused a couple of issues when suddenly nobody could print. So, you know, would have been nice to know about that ahead of time if they had provided me that information when I asked for it. Other than that, I don't really have a whole lot more to add to what John's given, other than to make sure that everything has been put down on paper or digitally, that the client can see and that it's been signed. Each client should have either a physical or a digital black book so that if anything happened to you, they've got all the information that they need to be able to continue on without you.
All right. Very good. All right, Brian, what do you have for us as far as your kind of overview of what you do?
Yeah. So a lot of what you guys said obviously applies. We want to know what's on the network, what kind of surprises await us. A recent onboarding we did, we actually found a Wi-Fi access point hiding up under a drop ceiling. They just kind of shoved it up there. There's this Ethernet cable just going up into the ceiling. I'm like, what the hell is that? Where is that going? And sure enough, there was an airport base station hanging out up there. Like, okay, so now we know where all those DHCP addresses are coming from. Nice job, guys. So, you know, finding the messes, obviously. And, you know, I actually just downloaded. I'm glad John told us about Soft Perfect because, you know, I haven't been really thrilled. Obviously, in my world, we're bizarro IT is the phrase I like to use. We're weird. We're all Mac, right? So a lot of the network scanners out there, it is. It's so weird. you know, I should flip my screen around on backwards. anyway, so the, you know, network scanner, and it looks like Soft Perfect actually has a Mac one. I just downloaded it. I'm not going to run it right now because I'm worried it would screw up the podcast. But in any case, I've got it sitting here waiting to try out. But yeah, we install our agent kind of the same way, you know, our stack. We'll even install our maintenance tool in a read-only type of format just so we can get a sense of, all right, do these guys have a bunch of adware, malware type stuff sitting there, lying in wait? How far behind are they in their patch? You know, what kind of maintenance is going to be needed to be on this machine, just to get a sense of how in depth we are. But I think the biggest thing, two things, is one, we have a standard. All right. So we have a standard of this is the perfect network, the perfect client environment. And how far off from the standard are these guys? You know, so you look at example like backup, right? Yeah, we have backup. Okay, well, let's see how good your backup is. Let's do some sample restores. If the building burned down, is your data going to survive? Oh, no on-site. No off-site. All you have is on-site, et cetera. Getting a sense of that and doing that across the board on everything. How old is their network gear? Are we going to run or replace that? Because one of the things we're trying to pitch is we're trying to pitch an all-in concept, flat fee monthly per device and per user, and that covers everything. So in that sort of scenario, we don't want to leave anything to chance and find out, hey, we just signed them to X amount of dollars, and now there's this insane project that we're going to have to eat because we're not going to be able to charge any labor for it. So we want to know about those things going in. The other thing we try to do is we try to figure out personalities, the people we're going to be interacting with, because you know, you don't do business with other businesses, you do business with people. So we're going to look at things like, is this going to be a point of contact where everything's going to filter through the POC, or is this going to be everybody can contact us? And generally, we don't really care. We leave it up to the client. We do want a POC regardless because we want a decision maker for certain things. But if it's a deal where they just want their people to be able to email into our help desk and ask for help, you know, I feel like it goes faster that way. So it's a better quality of service. But sometimes POC just wants everything to filter through them, and that's cool too. But we want to know that. We want to know that going in, and we want to know a preferred contact method. Are they going to be easier to reach via email, text, or phone? You know, are we going to leave 20 voicemails and then they'll finally reply to an email that you send, or vice versa? We'd like to know that going in. And obviously just getting to know the different people. There's the PETA factor. How much of a pain in the butt are they going to be? And do we need to raise our rate, to compensate for the fact that they're a pain in the butt? You know, and charge more for the annoyance factor. Those are things we're all trying to flesh out at the beginning, in addition, obviously, to all the technical. And, you know, our goal will be at the onset is to leave them with a report of, okay, here's everything we're going to do to your network and to your devices as we go. And they can take that report, pay us for the report, and hand it to anybody else in town and say, hey, here's the recipe Best Max left us. Can you do this for us? Because we figure by the time they get our report and they've seen our process and they've worked with us during this process, that'll help us close the deal.
That's good. Because a lot of people are afraid of actually leaving the client with something that they can take to a competitor and actually kind of get, you know, a lower price somewhere else. But I think I'm in agreement with you. To me, business to business or person to person, I like the way you put it, is actually something that is personal. And it's more of you're building a relationship. If you don't have a relationship that's a good relationship, then you probably should get out of it because it's not healthy for either side.
I'll second or third that. I think Brian's absolutely right. Maybe top of the list should be identifying those personalities, exactly what he said. Because I do business the exact same way. I'm all in, you know, all you can eat buffet. If there's not a good trust, a good working relationship, it just doesn't work, period. So,
and I want to find that out at the beginning. I mean, if I hand them the report and they're going to go shop around that report, good luck.
Right.
You know, that's not going to be good.
What you want anyways, not doing what you want. Yeah, absolutely. That is wise words.
You know, it's funny because John and Brian, I'm going to tell you that, do you know, you can't actually make it so that you can do an all you can eat. It just doesn't work. It's not sustainable. It's not doable.
Really? That's news to me.
Well, you know, that's the stupid things that people will say. Oh, I would never do an all you can eat. Really? That doesn't work.
No, I love all you can eat, man. We actually opened it up because I'll give the naysayers a little bit of credit, because just recently we made a decision that our sales growth isn't quite what we'd like it to be. And we think it's because of the fact that all you can eat is a hard thing for customers to grasp, especially when customers are used to, you know, the value proposition of time and materials billing. You know, it's very easy. Guy was here. He spent 4 hours working on my network. I cut him a check for 4 hours. Boom, value. It's easy. But what we have to do when we're selling it is we have to say, okay, well, look, it's a different value proposition. Our goals are aligned with yours. We're more profitable when your stuff doesn't break.
Right.
And so we don't want your stuff to break. In fact, we're going to do everything we can to make sure your stuff doesn't break. But even then, you know, we're still asking for a pretty good dollar per seat margin. And it's like, whoa, I'm only used to paying $100 an hour when I need something. You're asking me to pay thousands of dollars a month. And it's like, yeah, it's a robustly better experience, but they don't trust you yet.
Yeah.
And so how do we earn that trust? And so
yeah, a lot of times I'll say, you're paying me not to see me.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll just work on projects together when, you know, we do that. But you're, otherwise you're paying me not to see me.
Right. Clearly I'm doing my job if you don't have to call. And you know, what I'm starting to find is that these all you can eat contracts are a lot easier to get once you've been working with somebody for 6 months or a year, and you've got an idea yep. of what type of common problems they wind up having in their network. I wound up going back to a client saying, listen, you know, between password resets alone, from some of your clients, you know, I've been pretty generous in doing 15-minute billing every time someone calls me for a password reset on your server, but like, look at how many calls that's generated. Plus, you've got these issues over here. We could have caught this if we were monitoring your network in the first place. So this wouldn't have even been a problem. And you can really take like how much time they lost, how much money they lost during that time, plus the cost of your support, and really say like, look, it's not that much more to move over to this. But guess what? You're going to have a lot less problems. People are going to be helped a lot faster. Maybe you're offering priority support to these clients now that that they'd be under that type of a contract. So, you know, there's a lot of value add that you can show to people, but you're absolutely right. That trust needs to be there for a lot of people to bite. And really for your own sake, you're going to want to know a little bit about their network before jumping into bed with some of these bigger clients too. Wind up, you know, drowning, trying to give them unlimited support.
Get a lot about their network. I mean, I want to know everything as much as we can, because, you know, I got burned by that a number of years ago. If you're going to Unconvention, you'll hear this story about how I almost tanked my business by signing a nightmare client. And it all happened because I didn't do enough due diligence. I mean, I got in and it was a really big contract with a private school. And again, I don't want to bury the lead at Unconvention, but bottom line is I learned a lot of lessons from that one. Yeah. And got out of there as fast as I could when we finally realized. But man, it was a brutal couple of years with those folks. And it's all because I didn't do my homework at the beginning. Just saw dollar signs, you know, Mr. Krabs. Whee! And no, bad, bad deal all around. So yeah, definitely do as much due diligence at the beginning, even giving it away free. You know, if you want to go in there and just you think, hey, this is going to be a hot client for me, fine, get in the door, do what you got to do, and do that for your benefit more so than for theirs. So you eat some cost associated with it, bearing in mind that you might be saving yourself a real big headache, or at least validating what appears to be a really great deal from the onset.
I was going to say, one of the things that John kind of taught me when you're going in to see a client, and I thought this made a lot of sense. A lot of times we will go in and we'll just maybe do a quick assessment. Well, you kind of do a phone assessment or however you want to do it, but you go to the point where he was telling me, you know what, charge a couple hours to go in and actually do a proper network analysis, see what they got going on, check all the stuff out, take pictures of what you need to take, you know, pictures of, figure out what you're going to do so you can put a game plan together. That's going to save you time and the customer time. Because maybe a 10-hour project, if I didn't go in prepared, could have turned into a 15-hour project, and it's going to cost them a lot more money. So, and not only that, we were building up a relationship at that point. They don't know me, I don't know them, but we're going to get to know each other over these couple hours that we're going to go in and do this network analysis. Now, a lot of people, they'll go, oh, I can't do that. Well, yeah, you can. There are good customers out there they're willing to pay the money to fix a problem. If they have a problem, you just got to go, I can solve the problem, but we really need to look at what it is you have and what's going to be the best bang for the buck for you. Not the cheapest, not the most expensive, but the best bang for the buck. We're here to help take care of you so you can run your day-to-day business and not have to worry about this type of stuff.
It really also kind of comes with how they find you, right? Because, I mean, you get some of our best clients happen because they're looking to outsource versus hiring, replacing an employee who just quit. And so we can convince them, hey, yeah, outsource with us. It'll be a better deal. But a lot of times you get the firemen, the firefighting. Right. They call us, says, the building's on fire. I don't want to talk about your managed services plan or whatever, any of that. Just put out this fire and get it done. So obviously, when you're going in there, there's a neat opportunity to build trust there, too. But they're already going to be paying you because you just got to be willing to go in and be, OK, I'll help try to help put out your fire. It's kind of a hard deal because sometimes you get sucked into way more than you want to deal with when for somebody who's obviously not going to be a client. But you go in there and you save the day, you know, then it, as long as you can kind of set it up that, okay, we don't normally do this, but we're going to come in, we're going to do this for you and get you out of this mess. But when we're done getting you out of this mess and you have a chance to see how we work and you're happy with the results, let's talk about an ongoing relationship from that point forward. And so it can be a great tool from that aspect as well.
That's good.
Now, do you guys charge for the initial network assessment?
Depends on how deep it goes. If it's a simple phone conversation or just even a visit, no. But when we get to the point where we start digging through their network and looking at stuff to correct, again, we'll put together a report. We will charge for that report because it's value that we can hand them, and then they can decide if they want to hire us long term or not.
John?
Almost exactly the same. If we already have the relationship, we ask for a year commitment, although it's not anything that we sign or really enforce, but we'll do all that work up front as long as they commit to us for a year. If not, you know, if it's just a one-off, obviously we bill for that.
Cool. I mean, for us, basically the way that I've looked at it when I'm going into a business and I'm putting in all that effort, either they're going to sign with us, and if they're going to sign with us, then the visit's going to be included in the contract. If they're not going to sign with us, then they're going to pay for it and they're going to get their black book. And I mean, that's all negotiated ahead of time, but they know that they're getting something physical at the end of it.
Well, let me ask you this. When you're going in and doing a network analysis of a customer's network, you know, I look at it, you can go in and depending on the size of the business or whatever, you can go in for 10 minutes, just kind of take a look around, figure out what they have, get an idea, write some ideas down. And then what I did in a lot of my cases is I'll go back, rewrite, you know, what I'm going to do, and then say, all right, well, we need to come in and do a thorough network analysis at this point. And this is where I charge them the 2 hours, because really they're not getting anything other than a chance to meet me. And I think that's also important too. A lot of times, this stuff can be done over the phone because we all know that you can know, like, and trust somebody a lot of times just within a 2-minute conversation with somebody. And it doesn't matter if you've never seen them before in your life. You just kind of know, or most people do. I do. I can tell somebody's full of it after about a 2-minute conversation with them. And so I think a lot of people look at that as, let's get this type of relationship and build it from a phone call and then moving on from there. So I guess there's a couple different ways to do it. I don't travel that far. So for me, it's not that big a deal. I'll zip over there, you know, in, you know, 5-minute drive and pop in and go, okay, what do we got going on?
Well, Brian kind of brought it up. I mean, the biggest thing is just trust your spider senses, I guess I would say. I mean, if you get on the phone with somebody, you know, and you start to click right away, it's just going to feel right, you know, and if they're receptive to what you're telling them, you know, you got to be careful. You're not getting the whole line of garbage back, but, you know, trust your spider senses. If you aren't hearing what you think you should hear, if buzzwords that you think are danger words, like price keeps coming up, or no, we're not, you know, we don't care about compliance, or just, you know, things that set off your spider senses, just, you got to learn to maybe walk away, even though the dollar signs might be really big. And I think Brian's example will be a prime learning example of that moving forward.
Absolutely. Now, when you guys go in and you set something up, at what point do you realize that maybe, and how do you bring this to the client, that there might have to be adjustments along the way or even after being with a client for a year's time, there might have to be adjustments. I know there's adding and subtracting computer workstations, all that kind of stuff, servers and whatnot. But is there any time that you go in and go, hey, we need to have a talk and the price is going up to this? Or do you just kind of take that price and go, hey, here's what it is on the next invoice?
I mean, that's a scope issue, right? Because when I sit down and I have somebody commit to something for a year, I'm committing to it for a year as well. So, you know, here's what's in your network. Here's the type of work that we're going to do for you. And here's everything that's in scope. If they want something outside of scope and they want to add it into the contract, that's a contract renegotiation. And I'm willing to do that during the year if it's going to be mutually beneficial. Otherwise, you know, it's just going to be a per incident request, right? So you have to be really specific ahead of time about what it is exactly that you're providing them so that they know when they're stepping outside of that boundary.
I agree 100%. I think a lot has to do with how you have your relationship set up with that client. If you are contract-based, yes, every time a change needs to be made, you have to renegotiate that contract so the terms meet what you've set for your SLAs or whatever it might be. A lot of the times, most of my contracts are relationship built. So if I have, it's conversation based and it's usually pretty easy. One of my largest clients seems to add another store or two every, couple months. So basically I said, as long as the stores are about the same size, I'm probably going to take you up the exact same price as the other stores plus 10% just because there's more labor. And I already feel like I'm charging them a fair price and they feel the same way. So it's pretty much just whatever you need to do, John, just make sure you're taking care of us, you know, that sort of thing. So, you know, you got to follow what your relationship is. And, you know, sometimes for most of my clients, you know, it's not even really a discussion for me to replace equipment. I might get a call or a question. Hey, what's this new 48 port switch that's $800, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, we did that because he had some bad ports. And they're just like, all right, I just need to justify it. Thank you. So, you know, a lot of it depends on your relationship and how you built that. So.
Yeah, bravo what John said. Absolutely. It's all about the relationship. Because, you know, when you've got that great working relationship, a lot of the bean counting becomes trivial. You know, they're just kind of like, you know, he's looking out for us. If he puts something in or wants us to do something. I mean, my favorite clients, which is most of them for us at this point, we go in and say, hey, you need XYZ solution because of blah. And they're like, okay. Or if it's not okay, it's, well, we don't have it in the budget right now. Can we do it 6 months from now? Yeah, we can do it 6 months from now, you know, but we'll figure it out. And there's not this whole, you know, hard sell. If you're having to hard sell every stupid thing you want to put in for them, you know, and our intent, you know, we're not doing this just because we want to be busy. We're doing this for their benefit. We're trying to improve their business, improve their situation, you know, so don't fight it. It's like Jerry Maguire, help me help you. Right. You know, if you have the great relationship, you got that. And that includes what you were asking about, you know, rate increases. And honestly, at Best Max, we've been very horrible about this over the past few years about rate increases. We haven't done a good rate increase in a long time. We're actually working on correcting it right now, where we're building in an inflation rate increase yearly, just like a 3-5% type of thing to stay ahead of inflation at the very least. But we have been very good about tracking it per user, per device, depending on the situation. So if we have, you know, 20 computers this month, we have 30 computers next month. Well, we don't even have to ask. You have 30 now. And it's in your agreement that we're going to charge you for the 30 because we're installing it. And so any kind of where it gets dicey is when they add people or they shuffle people around and they don't talk with us. Well, that's what quarterly business reviews are for. And we've actually taken those, a lot of those QBR type things and moved them to monthly via email. Just, hey, a real simple email my assistant sends to every single one of our clients every month. Hey, here's your backup situation, what our audit looked like. Here's our any open monitoring or maintenance type things we need help with. And hey, what's new? You hire anybody, you fire anybody, you looking to grow next month, then what's up? And so we can kind of get that ball rolling. At the very least, it's a touch point, which when you're doing this sort of work, anytime you can be top of mind with the client is perfect. But it also helps us get ahead of things like rate increases and stuff like that.
I agree with Brian 100% there too. I consider myself a horrible salesperson. So I hate that hard sell. Mm-hmm. It's just about the solution. Let's just make it work, plan for your growth, you know, make sure performance, uptime, you know, I'm just a solution provider and a partner in your business. I'm not out here to sell you anything.
Yeah.
You know, you pay me that flat fee. I'm not making money off of, you know, what I'm telling you to do. I'm doing this because your business needs to do this.
The phrase we like is I'm on your team, not on your payroll.
Amen.
There you go. Yeah. It sounds like the number one thing you guys are talking about is communication, which I think there's a lot of businesses out there that have a problem with proper communication. All right. So let's see. Now, when you guys go into a network and you see that it's just a mess and is literally just going to, the project work for this is going to literally cost thousands and thousands of dollars. And maybe it's a small, medium-sized business. Maybe they don't have the funding for that to do it all at one time. How do you guys go about basically saying, okay, within the next year, here's where we need to get to. And here's the steps we're going to do every 3 months. Or how, you know, however you're going to do that.
Well, it depends on their receptiveness to that plan. I mean, I will step up and work with a client that's in that type of situation, as long as they're receptive to knowing that they have the need to do that. You know, if we just had to step through something, hey, they've got a 2003 server, you know, or we just have to prioritize what needs to happen. If they will commit to the schedule and we can work through that, I think that's a great client because you're going to be able to get to build their infrastructure and everything that they're doing precisely how you want it moving through that. If it's a client that says, oh, there's no way we can do that, that is probably business you don't want because, or you're going to have to charge them a ton because you're going to be chasing that, those issues. If they already have old infrastructure, poor equipment, blah, 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 you know, that's going to be a money loser unless you charge them a ton. So in the end, it would be cheaper for them just to fix their problems over time and have a good relationship with you.
Yeah, it's about whether they want to be proactive or reactive, right? I mean, if that's a personality thing. And, you know, obviously we're looking for clients. Our whole mantra is being proactive, getting out in front of problems before they blow up on you. But if they are part of the challenge, of course, in any kind of managed services type relationship is if you get a client that, you know, they don't even want to pay for insurance because they're so reactive. Yeah, we'll just pay for it when it breaks. Don't worry about it. Yeah, no, that's not going to be a great fit for us. So there you go.
Okay. Chris?
For the most part, it's going to be something that we're going to try to plan. And I'm on the same page as these guys. If nobody wants to make a plan, this isn't the type of client that I'm going to want to have. And I mean, that goes for anybody that uses their computers for any kind of a professional reason, whether it be, a small, two person office to, 100 people in an office to a pro gamer. It doesn't really matter what you're doing with your computer. If you're making money doing it, then we need to know that in a year when that motherboard needs to be replaced or in 2 years when this computer needs to be replaced, I'm not going to get a whole lot of pushback from you because this is the plan that we made to minimize your costs because we know that at this point in time, it's going to be worth replacing that unit financially than it will be to continue supporting it. And there's too many companies out there, too many people out there, exactly as we were saying, that they want to be really reactive about it. They want to deal with things when they break, and they're not thinking about the long-term consequences of, you know, what happens if this computer is down for 3 days? What happens if this system isn't going to be available for the employees to use? There's a lot more costs than just what they're shelling out of pocket to replace something or to fix something.
Okay. John, I got a question for you. So if you are, what's something that you wish you would have done in one of these moments where you're beating your head against the wall because you forgot to check something, and what would that be, and what did it teach you, and how did you move ahead and maybe add it to your list of 10 or hopefully an ongoing moving list, I would imagine, sounds like. What's a big one that probably hits you where you go, I really wish I would have checked this?
you know, my silence is not that I don't have one. It's my silence is I'm trying rapidly to pick out the one that I want to talk about. There's been so many. I mean, any network you step in that you haven't set up is always full of pitfalls and surprises, really, because you never know what the person before you did. You know, Brian brought up a good point. You know, where's this Ethernet cable going? You know, who plugged in what somewhere else? Or, you know, who let their kids come in and, you know, there's an Xbox in the lunchroom or, you know, something. It always surprises me what you run into. You know, the biggest thing that I would probably suggest, and it's true in anything, is, you know, piss poor planning is poor performance, 5 P's. So, you know, if you do a little bit of planning in anything you go into, like if you're going to replace the router or UTM device at a location, well, try to pre-program that thing before you get on site. Do all your planning and stuff before you get on site, because inevitably when you get on site and you find that mystery device or something isn't working, well, you don't have to do everything else. You're already properly planned out. You already have good performance measures in place. And now you can step through whatever isolated mystery that you've found and focus on that instead of having to recover from poor planning in the first place. So again, I think this goes back to the first question. You did your good network inventory, so, and you did all your due diligence. So now you should limit those surprises. That's the idea.
Okay.
I mean, it's like combat. You know, does the first plan ever work? No, it never works the first time you walk into the network. You're always going to have to deviate from that plan somehow.
Yeah, you got to adjust on the fly.
You got it.
All right, so Chris, how about you?
Yeah, I would have to say that the biggest one that I was bid on was signing a contract with somebody without realizing that there was a separate room. It's hard to explain, but it was one of those situations where somebody had a shared office. They had two rooms of their shared office, and I didn't think to ask, do you have any other rooms in here? That didn't seem to be a question I should have to ask. So there was a completely separate room with two computers and a small 4-port switch that I hadn't investigated, and I didn't run the Ninja NMS, so I didn't actually have all of the network information yet before I signed that contract. I wound up supporting two computers for free for the first 6 months.
Ooh. Now, for those that don't know, explain what Ninja NMS is.
Sure. In the Ninja MSP software, there it is, we have a separate tool, which is, I think it's Network Management System is what the NMS stands for.
So you just say things and you don't even know what they stand for.
Nobody quote me on that. But here's what the software does is the software you install it on either a server or if they don't have a server on a workstation that isn't going to be shut off. And it actively scans the network for devices and it'll feed it into your Ninja dashboard. So, you know, if I miss something or if a new something is added into a network, I'll wind up being notified because I'll get the email notification that a new device was added into the dashboard.
Okay. Very good. This is the reason I don't use acronyms, people, because, even though people think it makes them sound smarter, it doesn't actually make them sound dumber sometimes.
Well, that's what it's called. That's the name of the product. I don't know what you want from me, Jeff, but I think that you and I are going to have to talk at the flagpole after the show.
Fight.
All right, Brian, how about you?
Well, yeah, you heard me mention the nightmare client earlier, but I'll use a different one this time. Because, hey, there's more than one. But no, that one almost tanked the business. That's why it's worse. But we've had plenty of bad situations over our years. One in particular was that comes to mind. We signed an agreement with a point of contact in an organization. It was a psychologist's office. And, you know, everything was going great. They were switchers. They had switched their entire network over to Apple gear. And so that's a common thing for us. So, you know, we go in, we set up their Mac. It wasn't quite exactly the server wasn't quite exactly the way we wanted it to be. But, you know, okay, fine, we'll work with it. They already bought the gear. They kind of were halfway into it when they realized the person that was doing it was a better accountant than an IT person. I'm sure you've dealt with those default technicians. And in any case, so they reached out for help. We got in, you know, took care of things like VPN and Wi-Fi, the whole nine. And then like a couple months later, we go in to check in on them and say, hey, how are things going? And hey, the point of contact's gone. Hey, yeah, she doesn't work here anymore. Here's your next one. And so, you know, we meet the new person, we go in and we talk with them and they're like, hey, can we talk about your services again? I'm like, sure. Here's the contract that your predecessor signed. And we walk through the whole thing and oh, okay, great. That's great. And, you know, while you're here, can you fix blah, blah, blah? Oh, yeah, yeah. You should just email that in as a ticket. You don't have to wait for us to show up to fix stuff. That's part of how our relationship works. And da, 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 da. We go through and we take care of their issue. A couple months later, guess what happens when we go back in? Oh, she's gone. She doesn't work here anymore. And here's the bottom line is the owner of this business was a nut job. She's insane. And she's, of course, she's a psychiatrist. So, you know, she's needs her own services to help herself. She ended up being completely batty. And so, you know, the big thing, my lesson from it was I need to meet the decision maker. Like right from go, you might be the point of contact. You might be the person who was ordered to go find IT support. I want to talk to the top dog. And as a corollary to that, if the top dog is always there and all of their people just are a revolving door of employees, there's your sign. So watch out for that one.
Okay.
That did not end well. The owner and I didn't part company in a good way. She's like, why aren't you doing blah, blah, blah? I'm like, read your contract that you said that your person signed. Well, I didn't sign it.
Oh,
I'm having flashbacks. You know?
Now I've ran into situations where you might have 30 Ethernet cables that are coming up through the floor, which is in a crawl space, which I'm not going down there to look to see why there's 30 that are not plugged into anything. And you find out you need about 8. And most of those are just run along the wall and whatnot. But there was one that was getting a weird signal, and I didn't notice it until after I left. And it would switch from gigabit Ethernet to 10 megabits per second. Yes, it went down that low. I'm like, why is there such a fluctuation here? Come to find out, as I'm looking at this and trying to figure out why it's fluctuating, I had to go back out on site, which I don't like to do if I don't have to. And I'm going out there and I'm looking and I finally trace the cables through the floor where they're going into. And there was somebody had put a splitter on this set of Ethernet cables, even though they could have just went the whole distance, but they didn't. They put a splitter on and added some more cable, which one end went to nothing. So I took the splitter out there, re-terminated the end, plugged it straight into the computer, done. Oh, wait, gigabits back, you're good to go. So those are just little things that, like John said, though, you don't always know what you're walking into. You have no idea why somebody has done something. So sometimes you just got to roll with it and figure some of the things out on the fly. So
that's a good point. And that brings up the point about having good partners that you work with. Like whoever's pulling your cable should have an understanding that, you know, we want home runs. The more home runs we can have, the better, instead of putting 17 switches throughout the office and doing all that kind of stuff. So, you know, when talking to the client, when, you know, it just makes things better. Let's just do things right the first time, and then you'll have fewer issues and it'll cost you a lot less in the long run. So again, this is a good personality trait to look for in your clients. Let's just do it the right the first time instead of patchworking it, which will cause everybody more work in the long run.
Yep. All right. So now, as far as, is there anything else that we haven't covered as far as onboarding that client, some of the things we can either avoid or some of the things that we can look for, or have we kind of covered everything at this point?
I think we've covered a good basic. I mean, a lot of the other shows that we talk about kind of ties into this stuff too. Like, you know, make sure that you've really done your research and figured out what you should be charging for, you know, these clients, whether you're doing per endpoint, per server, per network device. You know, make sure that if you're going to be doing a contract, that you've had a lawyer review your contracts. Technible has some great contract templates that you can use. But just, you know, make sure that you're putting yourself in a position to succeed in the first place before you start offering the service. So if you're trying to backpedal and figure all of these things out after, your game plan is not going to be nearly as thought out. You'll wind up rushing something, you'll forget something, and then you'll wind up giving away 6 months of support because you missed those computers.
Good point. John?
No, ditto to Chris. I mean, piss poor planning, poor performance, 5 P's.
All right. Brian, any last thoughts?
Let me piggyback off of the kind of spin that a little bit, what Chris just said, because I do agree. Yeah, you got to get your ducks in a row. Absolutely. With contract and just make sure what you're doing is solid. But I think a lot of people who are listening to this, who maybe are kind of fresh, kind of new starting out, might get into a position where they end up with analysis paralysis. Like, everything's got to be perfect before I go in, or I'm going to lose my shirt on 6 months of free service for somebody. No, dude, ready, fire, aim. You know, be nimble enough to change on the fly as you learn. When you know better, do better. But go. I mean, nothing replaces action, right? So don't just sit on the sidelines and maybe in a year or two, you finally have everything perfect. Perfect is the enemy of good, right? I mean, you've got to get out there and start doing it and have some of this experience. Yeah, learn from the things you're hearing from us and from your other peers in the industry and do the best you can and you know, do things right. But yeah, don't try to be mistake-free. You're never going to be mistake-free. Just learn from it and do better on the next go. But don't use that as an excuse to not do it. Just do it.
Sometimes you got to stumble over yourself just to learn from it. So I always tell people that, yes, you know, experience is the best teacher as long as it's somebody else's experience. But the reality is, this is how you are who you are by the experiences you have in life. You wouldn't be the person you are today if you didn't have those experiences. So exactly what Brian's saying, if you're sitting back and just waiting, that's not the way to do it. Go out there, stub your toe. You'll figure it out. It'll be okay. And you can move along and grow your business. All right. I think that is a lot of good information and a good basis of where to kind of start when you're doing this. And you will figure a lot of stuff out as you go also. All right. So let's take another quick break and then we'll get into the last portion of the show. If you guys would like to, guys and gals, if you would like to support this show, go to patreon.com/computerrepairpodcast. And I want to thank all of our Patreon supporters for your continued support. We appreciate everything you do. It pays the bills and keeps the lights on. So thank you for that. All right, let's answer some emails and take some calls. Phone lines are open. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. What we're going to do is we're going to play a voicemail first.
Hey, Jeff and the Podnuts people. I hear you advertising for the Unconvention, but there's a bigger convention at the end of September. It's the Microsoft Ignite event. Just wanted to know if you guys are planning on doing like a meetup or anything. I'll actually be there. It would be great if we could all meet up. Probably a few hundred people show up at any meetups there because it's a big convention. Well, let me know. I'll watch the show this Sunday. Take care. Bye.
All right. And I'm not sure who that was from. But yeah, so Microsoft Ignite, I know it's a big event. And, you know, obviously people like Brian, he won't be there.
No, I'm not going. They won't like me there.
Come over to the light, buddy.
Right. You don't know the power of the dark side.
Yeah, what? Ignite's over down in Orlando, so.
Nice place to visit, right? In a nice place for vacation. So, I won't be going to that. Yeah, I'm sure it would be nice. And I would love to go to, conventions and hang out and stuff like that. So it sounds like a lot of fun. And I've always heard good things about those events. But yeah, so if you are going to be down in Orlando, Florida during that time period at the end of September, definitely check that out. And I'm sure people can get together and do that.
You know, that's a cool idea. I mean, we wanted to try to all do that. I don't think Ignite has ever been on our list. We've all done Channel Pro and all that sort of thing. But Ignite would be a great one for all of us to attend because that is right in our wheelhouse as far as what we do.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. So let's see. Let's go ahead and go to our first email. John, I'm going to go ahead and read this. This is one that came to you, and then I'm going to let you embellish on it and go from there, unless you have it already pulled up, which I totally forgot to ask you this week. All right, so let me go with this. This says, good afternoon, John. This was sent straight to John. It says, first, let me say, I really enjoy listening to you on Podnuts. I always listen a little bit harder when you were on there. That's just wrong. No, I'm just kidding. That's John. No, that's cool. My question is about server imaging software, which I know nothing about. All right. At this stage of my business, I'm looking for software to create an image of a server prior to doing any work on it. Just something to have disaster recovery. I've looked at many options. However, they seem to be very expensive or have some sort of license restrictions that don't work for what I want to do. This product would be preferably be able to run on an active server. Any suggestions? Thanks for any ideas and keep up the good work on the podcast. Cheers, Josh. All right, so John, you had a couple things that you had come up for imaging on servers, correct?
So if I need to make sure I have a very good image before I do anything on a server, I usually do not do a live image. I will do a boot from something to get that image. A product I've used in the past that I've talked about is by Terabyte Unlimited. They make a great boot product, very inexpensive, under $100. It will take a fantastic and very fast image. The other one that I've just started using is called Active Boot Disk. Marvin B over on Podnuts Pro talked about it. That's a product that I've been using now, which I like a lot. Again, it is $100 for a, well, I think I paid $150 because I got 2 years of support and updates included in that. But that is a technician's license, so that is great. I've had very good luck with that. And both of those products do have Windows components so that if you did want to do a live while the service is in production, you would be able to do a VSS or active backup or full image of that system as well. But if I need something I really rely on, I usually do not do an active backup. I usually try to boot from something and shoot that over.
And what do you normally use for?
Active boot disk is what I'm using now.
Okay. And that makes an image offline, not while it's actively running, correct?
It'll do an online image as well.
Oh, it does both. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And it'll work with RAID arrays. It'll work with standard disks, SAS, SATA, anything.
Okay. All right. Chris, you got anything to add to that? Anything that you use for doing those active images?
Yeah.
Now, that's a one-time image, though. That's not a backup image. You wanted something inexpensive to do backup images, I might look at the Easus products.
Okay.
Yeah, like the thing is that for the most part, if I have to do a one-time backup, it's not going to be something that's in production, something that I'm repairing. So, you know, I clone the disks. I have a toaster that I use for that for the most part. I don't really deal with RAIDs all that often. If I came into that more, I'd probably have to do a bit more research into it, but it's not something I come up with nearly as often as these guys.
Okay. And Brian, for the 4 Mac servers that are still out in existence, what would you use in that case?
Oh, man.
I'm sorry. I had to.
I'm booking my tickets for Ignite now. Anyway, so yeah, actually, we've got a number of different tools we'll use for imaging. Imaging on the Mac platform actually was huge about the same time that Mac server was a thing. And we're starting to see that go away. In fact, Apple just released something this week. Was it this week or last? Sometime recently, that basically said that imaging is dead and that you shouldn't do it. You should use thin provisioning type stuff where you'll take a clean OS out of the box. Maybe even use an MDM to manage it and then push your stuff from there and then build it out. You shouldn't be wiping the drive and re-imaging it from base image anymore. And we've actually been seeing that trend for a number of years that's the case. So you're looking at getting it into some sort of management infrastructure. That said, if you're just looking to image something of either for setup, there's a number of ways you can do it. You could use for a live server, for a backup on a live machine, you'd probably want to use my favorite's Carbon Copy Cloner. They just brought out version 5. I love that because it's based on the rsync binary, so it's very trustworthy. It works great, and it creates some bootable images as well. So that's always nice. And if you're looking for something infrastructure-wise, there's obviously commercial tools available, but to get in inexpensively, take a look at Deploy Studio.
Okay.
Awesome. That's a good one.
Very good. Very good.
Links forthcoming.
Yes.
In the chat.
Yeah, they'll all be there. We'll have those in the show notes too, as John is furiously typing away at his keyboard. All right. So let's go ahead. All right. So here is something that came up on a Facebook message that I got from Taz, Michael Cooley. And he sent this to me on Facebook. And basically it was entrepreneurs, or why entrepreneurs should avoid business credit cards. And basically I'm going to have a link for the article. I'll have that in the show notes. But basically what they were saying was business credit cards for a business owner have a lot tougher rules than actually just using a personal credit card for whatever reason. So the point of this article was use a personal credit card for you and pay it out of your business account and all that kind of stuff. Now, some of the thing had to do with fees and different things like that. And my suggestion is always going to be for a credit card is you're putting stuff on a credit card. You need to pay it off that month and not incur any interest on those things, because that's doesn't make any good business sense. Don't be giving your money away. It's great for a fixed thing that you can go back and pay later, just so you can have everything in one spot and make sure that you're doing all your accounting and all that kind of stuff. But I just thought it was interesting that they were actually suggesting that you not use business credit cards. Have you guys found that? There was things like piercing the corporate veil was one of the things that came up, and that was basically they could go through and find who actually has that business credit card and go after the person personally. It's not actually tied to your business. So there's things like that, and they're always the thing of, it seems like with business credit cards, the interest rates are always going up, which in my opinion, like I said, that should be a moot point for everyone because they shouldn't be paying those interest fees anyways when they're using those cards. So
primary concern on that is, where do you want the liability for that? So who owns the debt that you're collecting? Does the business own that debt, your corporate entity, or do you personally hold that debt? So that is the main consideration. Everything else is just where you get the best deal.
Well, and that's what they were basically saying, that they could actually go through, even if the business owns it, they can actually do what a process calling piercing the corporate veil and go after you personally.
Be honest about piercing the corporate veil, though, right? It's just a tactic.
I mean,
when you're talking about the defense of a business, it's like insurance. They're going to come after you, and they're going to come after your business at the same time anyway. I mean, the lawsuit's going to name you both just to see what they can get away with. And so it's a defense strategy. You know, I don't know if it's, to me, in my mind, we use business credit card exactly. It was actually our accountant's recommendation. We used to pay for everything out of the checking account. We got a new accountant a few years back, and one of their first suggestions was, do you have a business credit card? We said, yes, we never use it. He said, use it. Get them to give you something with points so you get some benefit out of it. Pay it off every single month, but we're going to put all of your bills on there. And he said, they like it. The IRS likes it because it's a paper trail that's better than a checking account. Because you can't, you know, you're not necessarily going to withdraw money out of an ATM. All your bills are going to be in this credit card. It's going to be very, very easy to find. And you're just going to cut one check out of your checking account every month to pay the stinking thing off. And they get all the benefits of reward out of it. So it wasn't my strategy at all. It was actually my accountant's strategy. Loved it.
That's good.
So in the 15 seconds that I've spent researching this, the main thing that I'm seeing is that piercing the corporate veil is more myth than reality. And then basic reason is because it is so extremely expensive to pierce that corporate veil that it is rarely tried. So, I mean, if you were talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars that somebody owed, your credit card company might come after you. But according to what I've seen on a couple pages here that look a little bit more credible than Bob's online community, it rarely tried. So,
gotcha.
Yeah,
I'll put a couple links in the notes, but that's something to think about.
But really, for them to even be able to come after you personally on it, you know, they would have to prove that you've bought something on a personal level using that card, right? And that it wasn't all business expense. The other thing you got to keep in mind too is that if you do wind up in a position where, you know, say you got yourself into a cash flow issue, you're not going to be able to pay that card off before the interest comes out. If that's a personal card, that interest is a personal expense. If that's a business card, that interest is a business expense. You know, you could try to claim it, but, you know, everything's deductible until you get an audit. And good luck proving that every single charge that was on that card when that interest came out was a business expense. So it's, it becomes way too complicated if you try to do everything off your own card.
I guess the main point of this, and that's a good point too, Chris, is Taz brought this up. I mean, the wise words from that are, just keep in mind, if you're using a personal card and you close your business, you're still going to carry all that personal debt, regardless if you have the business or not. So, yep. I mean, the good point of Taz bringing this up is just, you know, have those considerations about your cash flow and what's happening with it and your expenses.
Yeah, that is what I took out of it. So I just thought it was an interesting article. I basically skimmed it and just saw that they were kind of saying that there were less benefits of having that business credit card. But I think Brian has just kind of debunked that whole myth.
One other benefit that we love about it, guys, is my employees all have these cards on the same account, and I can limit their spend. So if it's a junior tech that's only been with us about a year or so, okay, here's your card, but you're not putting any more than like $500 a shot on it, you know, versus my assistant, she's got the whole line. And so forth. So, and we can track by which, and this with our vendor that we're using, we can actually track who spent what. So we can actually look back and say, oh, hey, James ran this number up, or, you know, whoever. But it's nice for those situations where, like, hey, we got a dead hard drive. We need to put a hard drive in. I'm going to run over to Best Buy and get one.
Right.
Prior to that, it was always like, okay, well, let me go online and buy it for you and say there you're authorized to pick it up. Now they just go and they get out the company card and there you go.
Makes it easier for the business owner, definitely.
Right.
All right, cool. So let's go ahead and we got one more email, and this says, hello, Jeff. First, we'd like to thank you for all the work you do on the various podcasts you do with Podnuts. Thank you. The information I've been able to get from your group, especially Marvin B., since my future business plans seem to follow closely with what he has done and yourself, since I plan on starting off similarly to how you are now. You may have gotten this already since it pertains to an old episode, number 468 with Mark Cobb. And I think this was on a Podnuts Daily. And if you have, feel free to disregard. However, it struck me that this may help a lot of techs that offer remote support. It was mentioned a few times the difficulty with describing processes with users remotely. I used to work in a support role that worked remotely with no ability or the need, to be honest, to screen share. We had trainees who used chasms.com. That's www.chasms.com. It is fairly basic, but you can walk through with the customer on multiple OS versions and types, mobile included. For example, we would need the customer's Mac or IP address to confirm they were on our Wi-Fi. We could walk them through with navigating to this information on a PC. This is from Trevor, aspiring network admin in North Carolina. Thank you, Trevor, for that email. And Chasms has been brought up before, and it is a cool little thing. If you have never checked it out, you can basically find any operating system that is out there or has ever been out there, and you could basically screen by screen walk somebody through an operating system. And it shows them exactly screen by screen what things to click on, exactly what you're trying to show them so they can see it. They're not looking around, and it makes things a lot easier. So that is definitely one way. It would drive me crazy, and quite honestly, I don't know how easy that would be as far as some customers who have a hard time with it. So a lot of times I like, basically I have a little widget on my website where you can click on it, it downloads a little program, instant house call, and it hooks up to the client. They just click the start, and basically I take over their machine and do what I need to do. So, but there are things with, you know, maybe going through, there's routers on there, there's all kinds of things that you could do. So maybe if you had a tech savvy person that was in a business office and you needed that to them to go through a Linksys router or something like that, whatever was sitting in the office, even though that's not the type of router it should be in there. But anyways, you could definitely do that and kind of walk them through, especially if they're a client that is farther away that you maybe are supporting. Have you guys ever used Chasms before? Anyone? All right. So something new. It's been brought up before. Like I said, I think Martin Obando was the first one that turned me on to that, and he's used that for years with a lot of his clients to walk them through certain things. Or even when you're trying to remember what the menu looked like on a certain router or a certain operating system, you know, maybe like Windows Vista or something like that, which apparently everybody hated, except me.
Yeah, except you.
Except me, because mine ran perfectly fine. It's just people were buying cheap hardware and trying to run a robust operating system on that cheap hardware. It's not my fault. It's not Vista's fault either. I sound like I'm protecting Microsoft. No, it is what it is. So anyways, that was the end of that email there. I think we are at the end of our show. So I'll tell you what, Chris, why don't you, I'm going to pick on you first. Why don't you give us one parting thought and let people know where they can find you and what you have for them?
Sure. So a big parting thought is, you know, make sure you have the right tools and make sure that you prepared yourself properly. Absolutely. I'm going to, you know, go back and say that Brian's right. You shouldn't try to be perfect on your way out, but always make sure you have a game plan for everything you're doing in business. If you want to know more about us, we are a remote support tech team. We provide white label IT services for computer businesses like yours. So if you're looking for some extra hands, give us a call. Number here, 866-568-2813. Or you can send us an email at info@rstechteam.com.
Awesome. Appreciate it. All right, Brian, if you could give us one parting thought and let people know where they could find you at with all your good Mac-ness.
Yeah, parting thought, you know, actually, it's you learn a lot by listening, you know, not to toot our own horn a little bit, but listen to the show. This first time I've been a guest, and I've already picked up like four or five tools that I've been writing down, like Chasms. And Chasms actually has something for Sierra and for iOS. I'm like, wow, really? This applies to me. So I've actually found two or three new tools that I didn't have before just from being on the show with you guys. So it's been great. And so that's really awesome. You can find me. We actually have just started launching our new BeSmart service, which is geared for Windows IT pros who want to get to know the Mac a little bit better and add it to their support offering and iOS for that matter. You can check it out at BeSmart. That's BeSmart.com.
Very good. Appreciate you coming out and sharing with us. It's been awesome.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for the invite.
No problem. All right. And John, give people one parting thought and let them know where they can find you at
mavengroup.net, and tell me more about this Chasms. All I want is somebody to spell it so I can put it in the show notes.
chasms.com. No problem. All right, so let's see, and I just want to let everybody know, as far as the BeSmart service, after this show, if you're listening to this in audio format, you'll get it the next day. We're actually going to do a one-on-one with me and Brian, and he's going to talk about his service in the next episode. And then if you're listening live right now, you can hang around, and we will start up another live feed probably around 6 o'clock-ish. So we'll get started right around there. You guys can pop on in. So come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnets.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. You can join in on a conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. You can also send an email to podnuts@podnuts.com, or you can leave a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162. We have audio available over at podnets.com, or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. And you can be notified when the show is live by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. That way, whenever we're on, you'll know about it. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast.
Dun, dun. dun, dun, dun,
are you seriously singing?
Yeah.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.